The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
America faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Things Podcast. Let's dive right in with the fifth most insane thing this week. It's an article. I just have to read it. There are no words. It's about a counter coup. The first time we've ever run one in response to the Democrats' many coups and perversions of the system. Except this one was totally legal, completely authorized, which is why it was so scandalous to the Democrats. You'll see why in a minute. Let me read this from the Substack EKO, which covers tech issues around freedom. The clock struck 2 a.m. on January 21st, 2025. Unbeknownst to America and most Democrats, Elon Musk's software team had already been at work as soon as Trump's hand went up on the Bible and he was sworn in on January 20th, they began. An army, a small army of 1,000 of them, marched into federal agencies. Nobody saw it coming because nothing like this has ever been done in modern history. They'd already written the algorithms, these coders, the best in the world, coders who already work for Elon Musk. One of them wrote the code that decoded the deep sea scrolls. That's who was unleashed on the federal bureaucracy. They'd already written their algorithms. They're not just experts at algorithms, they're experts at payment systems. They are a particular kind of engineer, the kind that, yes, works for Elon Musk, who you'll remember first came to fame and power at PayPal, where he completely overhauled and re-engineered the world's payment systems. People forget that was his first specialty. And he unleashed that talented crew on the federal government with no warning. Oh, federal bureaucrats knew DOGE was coming, but they expected requests for budget documents, stuff like that. The author writes, while career bureaucrats prepared orientation packets and welcome memos for DOGE, DOGE's team was already deep inside the payment systems. No committees, no approvals, no red tape. Just four coders with unprecedented access and algorithms brought in, ready to run. By the time the clock struck 2 a.m. on the first day, so think about it, they've gone in there right around noon as soon as Trump is sworn in. It's now 2 a.m. January 21st. They're still working as fast as they can before people figure out what they're doing. All of this authorized by Donald Trump and completely legal, of course. Let me read it to you. In the Treasury's basement, fluorescent lights hummed above four young coders. Their screens cast blue light across government-issued desks, illuminating energy drink cans and agency badges as their algorithms crawled through decades of payment data. One number kept growing, 17 billion in redundant programs and counting. We're in a cash bobo, message the team, all of it. Edward Korestein's code had already mapped three subsystems. Luke Ferrador's algorithms were tracing payment flows across agencies. Ethan Sharotran's analysis revealed patterns that career officials didn't even know existed. By dawn, they would understand more about the Treasury's operations than people who had worked there for decades. It wasn't a hack. This wasn't a breach. This was authorized disruption. While career bureaucrats prepared orientation packs and welcome memos for DOGE, DOGE's team was already deep inside the payment systems. Again, no committees, no approvals, no red tape, just four coders with unprecedented access and algorithms ready to run. The beautiful thing about payment systems, noted a transition official watching their screens, is that they don't lie. You can spin policy all day long, but money leaves a trail. That trail led to staggering discoveries, programs marked as independent revealed coordinated funding systems, grants labeled as humanitarian aid showed curious detours through complex networks. Black budgets, once shrouded in secrecy, began to unravel under algorithmic scrutiny. By 6 a.m., Treasury's career officials began arriving for work, they found systems they thought impenetrable already mapped, networks they believed hidden already exposed, power structures built over decades revealed in hours, their traditional defenses, slow-walking decisions, leaking damaging stories, stonewalling requests for payment information, proved useless against an opponent moving faster than their systems could react. By the time they drafted their first memo objecting to this breach, three more systems had already been mapped. Pull this thread, a senior official warned, watching patterns emerge across DOGE's screens, and the whole sweater unravels. He wasn't wrong, but he misunderstood something crucial. That was exactly the point. This wasn't just another transition. This wasn't just another reform effort. This was the start of something unprecedented, a revolution. Powered by preparation, presidential will, and technological precision, the storm had arrived, and the Treasury was just the beginning. Folks, once David Labrick, he's the top Treasury Department career official, the top operator for more than a decade of this payment system, realized what they were doing, got on the phone, because Trump had appointed David Labrick to be the acting Treasury Director until Scott Bessent could be confirmed. Once Labrick realized what they were doing, he freaked out and tried to stop them, ultimately resigning in protest. But it didn't stop them. Now, wait till you see how all of this went down. For decades, the author writes, this principle articulated by conservative strategist Troop Hemingway, personnel is policy, remained more theory than practice. Previous administrations spent months, even years, trying to staff key positions within the federal government. Trump's first term saw barely 100 political appointees confirmed by February 2017. So every delay meant another victory for the permanent bureaucracy who wants to hide all of these funding networks. But this time was different. While the media focused on campaign rallies and political theater on Inauguration Day, a quiet army was being assembled. They were moving into federal offices across D.C. Veteran strategists mapped the administrative state's pressure points. Think tanks developed action plans for every agency. Policy institutes trained rapid deployment teams. This is incredible. Former appointees shared battlefield intelligence from previous administrative failures. So by Inauguration Day, what Trump had done was identified over 1,000 pre-vetted personnel, and they stood ready, each armed with clear objectives, mapped legal authorities, direct lines to support networks. This wasn't just staffing. It was a battle plan. Okay, these people are the under managers that did not have to be approved by the Senate. Okay, so Trump had them ready to walk in as soon as his hand went up. So it wasn't just DOGE and the software managers. That's what the media has been focusing on. This was a small army of experts who immediately, with lanyards on, walked right into the federal government. Quote, this is the new normal, Vice President J.D. Vance declared from his West Wing office studying real-time data flows across agency systems. He's having the time of his life, he said, referred to the president's relentless drive. We've done more in 2 weeks than others did in years. The secret wasn't just speed, it was precision. Instead of waiting for Senate confirmations, again, the transition team prioritized non-Senate confirmed positions. While Democrats prepared for traditional confirmation battles over cabinet posts, an army of aligned personnel was already moving into place. Strategic positions were identified, legal authorities were mapped, support networks had been established. We don't have a lot of time, the president reminded this team daily. 4 years is a lot of time in political life, but not a long time in real life. This urgency drove innovation. When DOGE's young coders breached Treasury's payment systems, pre-positioned legal teams neutralized resistance within hours. When career officials tried revoking system access, they discovered DOGE's authority came from levels they couldn't challenge. When leaks surfaced, rapid response units fed counter-narratives to alternative media almost instantly. When you look at the people surrounding the president, J.D. Vance noted, we're trying to make it sort of easy for him to do what he wants to do in government. When you have the entire team firing on all cylinders, you can get a lot done. The permanent bureaucracy never saw it coming. They were prepared for resistance. They were ready for protest. They had plans for leaks and legal challenges, but they had no defense against an opponent who had spent years preparing for this moment. This wasn't about filling seats. It was about building a machine designed to transform American governance. Every position mattered. Every appointment carried weight. And behind it all stood a president counting down, not years or months, but days and weeks, driving his team forward with relentless energy. The foundation was set and the revolution was just beginning. USAID fell next. No midnight raids this time, no secret algorithms, just a simple memo on agency letterhead pursuant to executive authority. Career officials panicked, and for good reason. USAID was created by executive order in 1961. USAID could be dissolved with a single presidential signature. No congressional approval needed. No court challenges possible. Just one pen stroke and six decades of carefully constructed financial networks would face sunlight. Pull this thread again, the senior official warned, watching DOGE's algorithms crawl through USAID's databases and a lot of sweaters start unraveling. The resistance was immediate and telling. Career officials who had barely blinked at Treasury's exposure now worked through weekends to block DOGE's access. Democrat senators who had ignored other moves suddenly demanded emergency hearings. Former USAID officials flooded media outlets with warnings about institutional knowledge loss and diplomatic catastrophe, but their traditional defenses crumbled against DOGE's new playbook. While bureaucrats drafted memos about proper procedures, the young coders were already mapping payment flows. While senators scheduled hearings, pre-positioned personnel were implementing new transparency protocols. While media allies prepared hit pieces, DOGE's algorithms exposed decades of questionable, listen to this, questionable transactions. The scale was breathtaking. EPA climate initiatives, not just mapped, found unauthorized programs in 47 states. Education's DEI maze, not just exposed, revealed coordination across 1,200 programs. Intelligence community black budget, not just traced, uncovered patterns hidden for 30 years. They got it all. The administrative state runs on two things, a senior advisor explained. Watching patterns emerge across DOGE's screens, control of information and money flows. His eyes track new connections forming in real time. We're not just exposing their networks, we're rewriting their DNA. The cracks began showing in unexpected places, a career EPA director. Tears streaming. Everything we built. A USAID veteran. Hands shaking. They're inside all of it. A Treasury lifer closing his office. They move faster than we can think. Across Washington, officials who had weathered every reform since Reagan began to quietly update leaked-in profiles. They're looking for jobs, y'all. A deputy director, open to opportunities. An agency chief, exploring new challenges. A bureau head, time for change. DOGE's algorithms weren't just programs. They were archaeology tools, excavating decades of buried networks. Each data point connected to another. Each discovery revealed new targets. Each pattern exposed larger systems. It's beautiful, one of the coders whispered, watching connections form across his screen, like watching a galaxy map itself. For the permanent bureaucracy, this wasn't just change. It was an extinction-level event. Their power came from controlling who got paid, when they got paid, what they got paid for. And now those controls were evaporating like dawn, burning away darkness. The pattern was devastating in its simplicity. Map the money flows, deploy aligned personnel, expose the networks, restructure the systems. By the time bureaucrats drafted objections to one breach, three more had already occurred. The revolution wasn't just spreading. It was accelerating. Folks, I'll attach the article so that you can read the rest of it, but you physically saw the fallout. By the time the Democrats figured out what happened this week, I mean, did you see any of the videos? Folks, I have never seen fear in their eyes like this before. Folks, they were so afraid that they were personally in the streets, not one or two of them, not just Chuck Schumer, all of them standing there outside Treasury. Folks, do you realize that Elon Musk slept at OPM? He brought in cots for these people, both the coders, but the middle manager types that Trump brought in. He brought in cots for his people and they slept. Do you know why they did that? In part because they were working around the clock, and that's the model he's followed before with, you know, with Twitter when they were cleaning that mess up and getting the FBI out of there and all the unnecessary employees and figuring it out how the place ran. But think about this. By the time the mob showed up screaming in the streets, demanding Musk's arrest, those coders can't come and go. They can't leave. They might have been attacked. They had to live there. This, folks, is hand-to-hand combat. I did a podcast early in the week. If you want deeper details, it's called Hand-to-Hand Combat. This is literally hand-to-hand combat. Now, why was Musk personally and his coders sleeping at the Office of Personnel Management? Because it oversees all 2.2 million federal employees. Donald Trump had to get basic information on who they were, where they are, what they make, what they do, and map it all. You got to understand, this is a battle for data. And Donald Trump has a right to this data. He has a right to see every payment. Folks, honest to God, the payment system should be online. Anybody should be able to go and look at it. You know why? I mean, I spent as a journalist, 8 years doing FOIA requests. Data, budget data, payments data, that is the beating heart of free information, of FOIA information. The fact that Donald Trump had to send the world's best software engineers in to get it is just shows you what we were up against. I mean, that anybody should be able to get. I mean, can you imagine being in a company, the company you work for, maybe you own a company, and them saying, no, you can't see the data? That's insane. Can you imagine the mayor of Greenville? Folks go to the city council meeting and they say, hey, what'd you spend? You know, how much is the police budget? What'd you spend money on last year? And they say, screw you. We're going to get violent in the streets. If you ask, you're not allowed to know. No. But that was the Democrats' position this week, that no one is allowed to know what they spent the money on. Now, think about this. Why did Trump and Elon Musk and all these people not just take their word for it? Why did they not just operate Doge off budget documents? Somehow, well, first of all, they knew they'd have a hard time getting the actual payments to see if they matched the budget documents. But somehow they knew there'd be mass levels of fraud. And guess what Trump posted yesterday on Truth Social? In terms of what they've already found, looks like billions of dollars have been stolen at USAID and other agencies. Much of it going to the fake news media as a pay billions as a payoff for creating good stories about the Democrats. The left wing rag known as Politico seems to have received $8 million. Actually, we know now we found more of it. It's $34 million. But anyway, did the New York Times receive money? He writes, question mark. Yeah, they did, actually, at least $54 million. Who else did? We know that now. Anyway, I'm just updating this. This could be the biggest scandal of them all, perhaps the biggest in history. The Democrats can't hide from this one. Too big, too dirty. Now, listen to what Musk tweeted this week. These two tweets are jaw dropping. They didn't get a lot of attention. The first tweet from Elon Musk: the Doge team discovered, among other things, that payment approval officers at Treasury were instructed always to approve payments, even, get this, even to known fraudulent groups or terrorist groups. They literally never denied a payment in their entire career, not even once. And then this devastating tweet from Elon Musk. Musk writes, career Treasury officials are breaking the law every hour of every day by approving payments that are fraudulent or do not match the funding laws passed by Congress. This needs to stop. And he puts it in all caps, now, exclamation point. Folks, they haven't even released all this stuff. No wonder Democrats are wild-eyed in the streets. Which leads us to insane thing number five. Not only is the media fake, it's been propped up by the federal government, all while this federal government simultaneously, out of USAID, ran censorship programs, and out of the State Department, ran the Global Engagement Center, whose primary focus, ironically, was demonetizing conservative media and Elon Musk. Basically, what it did was went around to advertising agencies in the country's biggest companies and pressured them not to advertise on X or in any way that would be, you know, beside support on conservative media, whether that's on YouTube or on Google, essentially demonetizing us while they funded, backdoor funded these media agencies. What is amazing, you can see some of this on my X feed, is that they spread the funding for these media outlets, not just in one agency, but across 10 to 12. I mean, you look at the New York Times, $54 million. And it's from everywhere, from the Department of the Interior to Health and Human Services, the Pentagon, the Treasury. I mean, so everybody's chipping in just a little bit. The way they paid Politico was actually kind of brilliant. Initially reported as $8 million, ended up being over $26 million that we found so far. Politico created this product. It's a special subscription, $15,000 a subscription. The Park Service alone had dozens. And the government just paid into these redundant subscriptions. It's kind of a genius way to do it. Anyway, by the end of next week, I mean, folks, we're going to have that. We're going to have all that, the media payments. But the one that got my attention the most was Reuters. If you're reading just about any mainstream media outlet, doesn't matter which one, you're probably reading a Reuters story. They produce the lying fake news stories that everyone else picks up, right? Okay, well, in the payment system, it shows that Reuters was paid $9 million by the Department of Defense, the Pentagon, the military. But it's how they coded it that says everything. To me, this is one of the biggest things this week. $9 million, the military says, paid to Reuters for, quote, social engineering and psychological operations. Is that what Reuters does? Is that what the mainstream media does? I mean, we knew it, you knew it, but it shows us that they knew it. They know they are fake news. Again, $9 million to implement, quote, social engineering and psychological operations. Well, on who? Well, on the American people, which, by the way, I should mention, is illegal. The military can't operate on our soil. They are, though, except in very limited circumstances. They're very rare and very limited. You can't do this. But they did. Now, listen to this. Social engineering and psychological operations against American citizens with their own dollars. The subhead on this, on what the military said it was doing with Reuters, quote, large-scale social deception. Folks, every conspiracy theory you ever wondered about just got confirmed. They know they're fake news. They know we're real news. And they know if they can't keep the American people in the middle of a narrative, they will not survive it politically. Had to laugh, by the way, as Doge is doing all this in the news of it is breaking. Even Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was trying to get ahead of it, confessing that Ukraine only received about $75 billion of the near $200 billion in aid allegedly sent from U.S. taxpayers. He even said to AP News, which, by the way, AP News got over $30 million from the federal government. He even said to, we know that from USAID. He even said to AP News, I don't know where all this money is. We never received it. Funny he never mentioned any of this before the Doge efforts. Insane thing number four. As we dig deeper into USAID, it's truly astonishing what we're finding. Folks, do you know there have been no less than 27 hearings? I went and looked this up. 27 hearings that I could find, could be more. Those are just the ones I found on the origins of COVID, right? Anthony Fauci testified at 12 of those hearings about the funding at the Wuhan lab. And when he was the head of the NIAID, he had funded them $6 million through Echo Health Alliance, mostly for deadly gain of function research, and killed about 7 million people in the process with the help of our worst enemy on earth, the communist Chinese. Okay, so you've seen his face all the time. You've seen Rand Paul grilling him, right? I've played you the cuts. Well, folks, listen to this. USAID gave more money to the Wuhan lab than Fauci. USAID, via Echo Health Alliance, the same conduit, gave the Wuhan lab, folks, that is the chief bioweapons lab of the Chinese People's Liberation Army. Bioweapons lab. That is how it is known worldwide. USAID gave Echo Health Alliance $54 million starting in 2018 to do gain of function research on coronaviruses. How convenient that USAID was funding censorship programs. Folks, it is the nexus, the nerve center of the censorship industry. It makes a lot of grants to universities over $50 million worth, who then turned around and go to work censoring social media, censoring Google, censoring places like that. How freaking convenient that the biggest donor to the Chinese Wuhan lab was also running the censorship programs, censoring the origin of COVID. I mean, this is like a movie. Mike Benz, a fascinating individual. We've had his audio clips on the podcast before. Mike Benz, a fascinating individual who used to run a section of the State Department, has been screaming about USAID and the State Department for a long time. Listen to what he said. I've been telling you guys forever, this is his tweet this week, that you've been living your whole life in a carefully constructed USAID Truman Show, where none of the institutions you meet, from the media to public health to universities to NGOs, those are international nonprofits, to terrorist groups, are the institutions you think they are. Speaking of terrorist groups, this is insane thing number four. You got a question, if it were not for USAID, if we would have terror groups active in the world. Here are the numbers that began to come out. $3.7 billion to Afghanistan after the Taliban takeover. All of it went to the Taliban. Folks, the Taliban run all the NGOs in the country and the government. It all went to the Taliban or their NGOs. $3.7 billion. Another $2 billion went to the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization. That is a recognized terror group, and to Hamas after October 7th. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. $9 million to the Syrian group that ended up going to Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda runs Syria now. $9 million for them. They're propping up Al-Qaeda. And a staggering $3.4 billion to Yemen, whose Houthi regime we're currently at war with. They're the pirates that have blocked 20% of world trade that flows through the Red Sea. Turns out we have been paying for that. Everybody's like, why do they have the most modern military equipment and drones? Why are they able to blow up these tanker ships all of a sudden? USAID. Folks, forget the Saudis. USAID was world terror's funding nexus. Folks, a lot of people are going to die in the coming decade because of this. It's very, very sad, including Americans. But I'm going to move on for that real quick because I've got to get to insane thing number three. The Daily Caller broke this and everybody's churning. It looks like there's a lot of Doge, USAID, and Treasury leaks. I think what they're doing is filtering this out gradually so people can process the horror of what the Democrats are. Headline: Biden administration filled terrorist coffers with over $1.3 billion before Trump took wrecking ball to foreign aid. Inside this article is the most stunning couple of paragraphs I think I've ever read. I was so upset when I read this. Look, I'm a tough person. I read negative things all the time. I don't think ever before have I had to stand up and walk away to just channel my rage out of my body. Do you remember October 7th? You remember the guys with the hang gliders? Do you remember the families tied down and burnt alive, including children? Do you remember the women whose legs were dislocated at the hips so they could be gang raped? Remember all that? Do you remember the video recorded by Hamas where they killed a 12-year-old child in front of their two siblings and parents and then recorded as it dawned on the family the child was dead? You remember the mom kept telling the other living son, he kept saying, "He's dead, mom, he's dead." And the mom is trying to calm him down. No, he's just hurt. He's okay. Don't, because she's trying to keep the kid from going hysterical and getting shot by Hamas. They're filming this for fun. They put it up on the internet. That's how I watch it. I will never get that out of my mind. I can't, I mean, that mother's presence of mind to watch her child executed in front of her and try to keep the other two calm so they can live. And here's the thing. I don't know whatever happened to that family. I still think about them today. Are they dead? Are they alive? I wonder about it. But I know this, the terrorists who killed that kid got paid a reward bounty by me. And that's why I had to stand up and walk away. Listen to this. The Biden administration, through USAID and the State Department, gave $265 million straight to the Palestinian Authority. Of the $265 million, the Palestinian Authority paid more than $97 million in what are called reward bounties direct to the perpetrators of the October 7th attacks. Here's how this works. And it's been a long-standing policy of the Palestinian Authority. If you were one of the hang glider dudes and you went in there and you died in the terror attack, your family gets funded by the Palestinian Authority for life. If you survived, then you get the reward bounty. And you paid. American taxpayers paid. Now, what is so outrageous about this that I've given it its own insane thing category is that back in 2018, I talked a lot about this on the air at the time. Back in 2018, Trump and the Republicans outlawed payments to the Palestinian Authority specifically because they use our money for evil and other terror attacks, but also to pay these bounties to terrorists. So these terrorists know they live, you know, they're very poor. They know either if they get killed that their family is taken care of for life if they can murder an Israeli or even American citizens. Some of them were killed. What's so nuts about this is that a conservative group sued Biden and former Secretary of State Antony Blinken on behalf of the terror victims because they broke the law in funding the terrorists. And the case is still ongoing. Folks, I got to tell you something. I said this on the show today. If Satan himself ran this agency, it wouldn't look any different. What you are seeing, and this is why the Democrats are wild-eyed in the streets, they never thought anyone would dig into this. They never thought anyone would get this. They have been stripped naked. And you know what's underneath? A tail and horns. This isn't just political differences. This isn't just radicalism. Folks, this is the beating heart of stark, raving, mad evil in the world. Literally evil. Because remember what Sarah Adams told us about when in that warning she had for us about the 1,000-strong Al-Qaeda army that's already in America. And when they are caught, she said in the fall, she said they will claim credit for ISIS, but they are Al-Qaeda. They are training in camps in Afghanistan. That is what that money is for. That money that we sent to literally revive the terror state. Insane thing number three. Folks, every evil thing the Democrats did ran through USAID. For instance, USAID paid $20 million to hit piece journalists to dig up dirt on Rudy Giuliani and use that dirt as the basis to impeach President Trump in 2019. Remember the CIA analyst who filed that whistleblower report that resulted in the 2019 impeachment? Yep. That was USAID too. They sponsor a group called the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. It was the main source for that CIA analyst whistleblower report. In fact, it was cited four times. And USAID has such control over the OCCRP that they personally select the staff in it and oversee its operation plans. That is from an investigative piece by liberal investigative journalist Michael Schellenberger, who writes for Public. He was the author of the Twitter files. Folks, USAID's reach, ubiquitousness, like Mike Benz explained to us in that tweet I read to you a little bit ago, The Truman Show, it's everywhere. It touches everything and makes things seem to be one thing when they're in fact another. For just one measure of that reach, we're learning how our world really works this week. That's the amazing thing about this week. I didn't think that I could be taught any more about how the world really works. And boy, my whole world has been rearranged this week. But if you want to measure in math how the world works this week, how big and ubiquitous, all-consuming the lie is, the narrative is, these statistics show it. Once it was all mapped, it was clear. USAID pays to support 6,200 journalists here and around the world, 707 news outlets, 279 media sector civil society organizations, many of which produce their own news as well. These NGOs will write articles now, and they are then run in the mainstream media. Folks, we laugh about Pravda in Russia. And Pravda actually is still a thing. There's a website. It's the Kremlin's state media. Folks, we not just have state media. We have world state media. controlled by our elites. Now you know. You knew it implicitly in your gut, but now you know. They all say the same thing at the same time. From Brussels to New York to LA to DC. This is why. 6,200 journalists, 707 news outlets, 279 media sector, civil society organizations. That's why. And if you want to know the measure of it, as admitted by the left, if you go to Reporters Without Borders, rsf.org right now, look at the headline. USA, Trump's foreign aid freeze throws journalism around the world into chaos. No, it throws fake news, narrative news around the world into chaos. All of it. Think about this. Controlled by the Democrat Party. They sponsor the terror groups. They give the money to Hamas. Folks, we literally have learned. I mean, think about this for a minute. You turn on the television, you see the Israeli-Hamas war, like what, over the last year? And Israel's lobbing missiles, you see them. And then the missiles are coming right back over from Hamas just as fiercely. And you think, these people are supposed to be poor. Where did they get the missiles? U.S. aid. So they prop up the terror groups, provide the missiles, and then they provide the coverage. Folks, the world is fake news. Here's another one. Contribute $54 million for the creation of COVID, kill 7 million people, and then through your censorship programs, censor the origin. Folks, this is unbelievable. And let me just read you this paragraph, okay, from Michael Schellenberger's site that broke the news about USAID. I mean, they've never even been to a single congressional hearing over the origin. Who cares about Fauci? I want to talk to these people. They've never been hauled in. Who the hell are these people? I just want to read this to you. Samantha Powers, the USA director under President Barack Obama, evaded questions about what U.S. aid had to do with the WIV, Wuhan Institute of Virology, alleged Senator Rand Paul in 2023. Quote, some of the research proposals in 2018 were the Wuhan Institute of Virology asking money to create a SARS-like coronavirus with a furin cleavage site, said Paul. That's exactly what COVID-19 turned out to be. This is from a letter that he wrote in 23 to Samantha Powers. We want to know, this was signed by 25 senators, we want to know if there were other research proposals you ever granted or denied that were in the same vein as creating viruses that could have become COVID-19. Oh, damn it, they did. Rand Paul writes of him and the 25 senators, we can't tell because you won't give us information. I now have 25 senators that have sent you a letter and you aren't responding. You are being dishonest. Yet while they could haul Fauci in, they never managed to haul in Samantha Power. And Schellenberger writes, and he's right, evidence of USAID withholding information from Congress is sufficient justification for Trump to remove the agency's leadership and pause funding. Folks, this was amazing. Did you realize there were 10,000 employees of USAID here and around the world? Trump recalled all but 270 of them and fired them. Democrats are saying this is unfair, but remember the background here. When Trump ordered a pause on all foreign aid, remember what they did last week? They gaffed him off. They kept making expenditures. And remember, he put the top 50 on leave. He had to try to get control. He tried to work with them. He said, stop spending the money. They defied him. And now they're all fired, as they should be. You can't leave something like this in place in the world. It's too much evil. Insane thing number two, I'll never forget the interview in which Paul Ratfink Ryan, the Speaker of the House, Trump's first term, declared that Republicans had given up on the culture wars. We wouldn't be fighting them anymore. We surrendered. No, we would be focused on financial policy, but there was no place for the Republican Party in the culture wars. Paul Ryan always kind of fashioned himself to be some kind of really, really smart libertarian. He was neither really smart or libertarian, just profoundly corrupt. But yeah, he declared it was over. And look, the Democrats believed him. They went, oh, cool, we'll go ahead and move women off the sports award podium. We'll move men into their most secret places. And folks, what the Democrats were setting up here was really honestly just one big orgy. That's what they wanted. Men and women naked together, gender not being a thing, all the abortions you want. It's who they are. Folks, I'll never forget this whole idea of gender neutral bathrooms really got its start in my very liberal hometown of Charlotte, North Carolina. I will never forget as long as I live the Charlotte Observer editorial board writing in an editorial that, quote, women and girls, unquote, needed to get used to the sight of male genitals in the bathroom, in the changing room, in the locker room. With men on girls' sports teams, women's sports teams, Democrats created the most misogynist world ever, a world in which a woman would only be allowed to stand on the awards podium and collect the world's records, the awards, the accolades that she had learned if the man said it was okay. Now, if the man did not want her to be there, then he would take her place. It was all up to the man. This was insane. And Paul Ryan's idea that, well, you know, it's just really smart. Republicans never going to be able to fight the culture wars died this week when we won an 80-20 battle. 80% of the population, 81 to be exact, is with us on this. 19% is with them. And Donald Trump signed an executive order barring men from girls' sports in any federally funded activity. Well, that covers just about every college and university in the country. The NCAA followed right away with a ban on men in women's sports. Now, the NCAA, as you know, regulates college sports. It oversees 1,100 colleges and universities in all 50 states that collectively enroll more than 530,000 student athletes. It's over. It's done. Folks, if you go and look at the picture of Leah Thomas when he beat Riley Gaines, he's standing with his stupid trophy that he stole in front of the NCAA logo. She's standing next to him. She looks devastated. Why? Because they had just swum the exact same time. Total tie. Out to the decimal places. So the judges thought, well, you know, we want to be progressive. This is a symbol of the times. They gave him the trophy and let him hold it. They didn't bar her from the award podium or anything. She got to stand there too. There was only one trophy, so they let him hold it. Because this was an iconic sports moment. Oh boy, was it. Iconic in that it would hope to eventually bring down the stark raving mad Democrat Party in this election when folks had had enough. We won the culture war this week. A very important battle. Not only did they lose, they retained the baggage, the political cost of losing. People think they're nuts. By the way, in the same Rasmussen poll of likely voters, you should know this, a majority of Democrats agree that men should not be in women's sports. Insane thing number one, Elon Musk and Donald Trump's shockingly simple economic plan. Right now, folks, the deficit, that's the amount every year by which we overspend. The deficit, keep listening because this is going to fascinate you, the punchline here. The deficit is $2 trillion that we spend, that we have to print or borrow because we don't have it. Here's Musk. Now, and at the end of it, the punchline is going to be where he's going to get it.
The goal in a nutshell is pretty straightforward. It's like we have a $2 trillion deficit, which is far in excess of economic growth. If we can get that deficit in half from $2 trillion to $1 trillion, and we can get the economic growth to match that $1 trillion growth in the money supply, that means there will be no inflation, and also that interest rates will drop, credit card interest down, mortgage interest down, car payment interest down, and prices at the store stay the same. That is a great outcome for people. And I think we can do it.
But the punchline is how he intends to do it. He believes that he can find $1 trillion in fraud and waste. Think about that. The significance of it is that the president, as the executive, would not have to go to Congress to get rid of the vast majority of that in most cases, especially if it's out of agencies like USAID, which he can just destroy with the flash of his pen because they were not created by Congress. Now for the punchline. After this week, Musk is already 10% of the way there, announcing that he and his team had already found $100 billion worth of wasted taxpayer money in the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare alone. That's fraud, duplication, and other problems. That's $100 billion of taxpayer money, he says in a tweet that he found Medicare and Medicaid alone. Folks, I want to make a prediction. He's going to get there. He is going to find $1 trillion worth of fraud. Not just waste, but actual fraud. And you know who it's going to be? Mostly people connected to the Democrat Party. There's going to be some Republicans in there, probably some of the obstinate ones like Mitch McConnell, who are getting paid off by the system. But it's mainly going to be the Democrats propping up the left wing as they've propped up the media with this fraudulent money running through NGOs and nonprofits and for-profits round and around and around in circles. We are going to find out. I want to make this prediction right now that the American people have been robbed blind on such a scale. There is almost or no match for it in human history, at least known human history, and that it was done by the greatest criminal syndicate the world has ever seen, the Democrat Party. I don't need spreadsheets to tell me this. All I need to do is look at their faces in the videos. All of those Congress members in the streets day after day, Congress members who at one point attempted to break into the Treasury, into USA to stop Musk and his coders physically, and that's all I need to know.
With Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.